WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Severe drought now covers more than 80% of Virginia. The Golden Pony, a popular music and food venue in Harrisonburg, will close next month after 11 years. And Virginia's Attorney General appeals the defeat of Virginia's redistricting referendum to the U.S. Supreme Court. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, May 12th. Despite recent rainfall, most of Virginia is still under severe drought conditions. Much of Southside Virginia, reaching up into Nelson County and areas near Stanton and Charlottesville, is listed under extreme drought. That's according to the most recent report from the U.S. Drought Monitor for Virginia. Rainfall amounts over the last 2 months are less than half of what is normal for this time of year. The lack of rain is impacting Virginia's agricultural industry and farmers' planting timelines. One of the most popular music venues in downtown Harrisonburg will close next month. The Golden Pony, a restaurant and bar, announced in Facebook and Instagram posts Monday that it will close in June. Owner Paul Summers said that financial difficulties were the main reason for the closure. In addition to local musicians, the Pony has hosted national and international touring acts. The Golden Pony opened 11 years ago as a successor to the Blue Nile restaurant, which had occupied the same space. Virginia's Attorney General has appealed Democrats' redistricting loss to the U.S. Supreme Court. Radio IQ's Brad Kuttner reports.
In the legal filing, Attorney General Jay Jones asked the nation's highest court to overturn the ruling of the state's highest court. Jones didn't offer additional comment, though in a phone call late Monday, Senate Majority Leader Scott Surovell spoke on the issue moments before the appeal to SCOTUS was filed.
Well, first of all, I can totally understand why a lot of people are extraordinarily upset that the Supreme Court of Virginia just threw out 3 million votes. The plan is that we intend to appeal the case to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Jones' legal filing argues the Supreme Court of Virginia overstepped its authority in trying to intervene in the state legislature setting the rules for a federal election. He also claims the state's high court made a, quote, grave misreading of federal law, which expressly fixes a single day for the election of representatives and delegates to Congress. Surovell explained it as such.
Both the United States Constitution and federal law in terms of how the United States defines federal elections. And while the state can regulate the manner of elections, we don't get to regulate when election day is.
The argument comes after the Supreme Court of Virginia found the first vote held by legislators beginning the constitutional amendment process took place during an ongoing election, voiding its result. The appeal seeks an administrative stay of the state's court's ruling, but it needs it fast. Surovell said the computers used in Virginia's elections are old and require time to program. He pointed to a May 12th deadline from the Virginia Department of Elections, included in earlier court briefs, that likely put changes this year out of reach unless SCOTUS intervenes. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Candidates for Congress in Virginia are scrambling to adjust to a new political reality in the wake of last week's state Supreme Court decision. Also with Radio IQ, Michael Pope reports.
Henrico prosecutor Shannon Taylor will be taking on Rob Whitman instead of John McGuire. Former Congressman Tom Perriello will be challenging John McGuire instead of Ben Klein. And Congressman Eugene Vindman will be running for re-election in his own district rather than taking on Whitman. J. Miles Coleman at the UVA Center for Politics says Delegate Dan Helmer and all the other candidates who were going to run in a redrawn so-called lobster district this year might end up running 2 years from now.
I'm sure state Democrats are probably going to try another remap attempt within the next few years. You know, maybe there will be a new District 7 in 2028. So in a sense, maybe that campaign might never end. That started this year, right? So that's probably the messiest one.
As for this year, Democrats feel pretty good about the likelihood of unseating Jen Kiggins and maybe even Rob Whitman. Lewis Jacobson at the Almanac of American Politics says Democrats might even be able to bring a serious challenge to John McGuire if the popularity of President Donald Trump and Republicans continues to decline.
If they can juice that a little bit more, or if they can get better than their national 5 or 6 point edge in Virginia specifically, that is what they would need to flip additional districts beyond those first two, the first and the second, that are definitely in play.
Candidates don't have much time to figure out districts where they want to run. The deadline to submit all the signatures and paperwork is 2 weeks away. I'm Michael Pope.
Many public school students across Virginia finished their standards of learning tests last week. It's the last round of tests before the minimum scores for math and reading go up. Virginia's Board of Education voted last fall to raise the bar. Currently, students need a 400 out of 600 to be considered proficient. The new minimum scores for reading and math will be phased in over several years and range between 430 and 479, depending on the grade level. Students showed some gains on last year's tests, but still fell behind their pre-pandemic peers. Governor Abigail Spanberger made good on a campaign promise to sign into law a paid family and medical leave program. Billy Shields with partner station VPM News has more.
Under the terms of the law, signed on Monday, 80% of a person's pay would be covered up to 12 weeks for medical or family reasons, including parental leave. Here's Spanberger after signing the law.
And for all the mothers in the room who spent a lovely Mother's Day, this makes this Monday, coming back to work, just a bit better. A bit sweeter.
Republican State Senator Glenn Sturdivant slammed the measure, calling it a new payroll tax on working families. Virginia now joins 13 other states and the District of Columbia as having some sort of family leave program. According to Spanberger's office, this move will benefit more than 3 million Virginians.
Billy Shields reporting. You've heard the phrase, like herding cats. That speaks to the independent nature of our feline friends. But most cat lovers know that cats can be trained. Radio IQ's Roxy Todd spoke with an animal behavior expert whose students successfully trained 14 shelter cats.
I have a cat with a temper that can flare at unpredictable moments, so I get why many people think cats just don't want to be trained. But this is a myth, says Lisa Gunter, an assistant professor of animal behavior and welfare at Virginia Tech.
I think one of the biggest things that I enjoy about this course is really dispelling those myths.
She taught an undergraduate class this semester, mentoring students to train shelter cats. Using treats and toys, the students spent 5 weeks teaching the cats to sit, spin, and even willingly go into a carrier.
They learn how to give a fist bump, so they'll do a little paw on the fist bump.
Gunter says training your cat to do tricks can deepen the bond with your pet and can improve communication between cats and humans.
The fact that we could train so many behaviors over just a short period of time, I think we probably aren't giving the cats in our lives the credit that they, you know, want to learn and can accomplish new behaviors, I think, quite readily if we spend the time.
The 14 cats they trained have all since been adopted, except for one, 10-month-old Delilah, a very sweet calico tabby who Gunter says now finds a lot of joy leaping into her carrier. As for my cat, after talking with Gunter, I bought some treats and we're working on her fist bump. I'm Roxy Todd.
Finally today, the coal mining town of Daint sits where the forks of Lick Creek come together. The town in far southwestern Virginia has had floods throughout its history. And with climate change, that flooding is getting worse. Radio IQ's Katie Burke spoke with one Black family whose ancestors worked in the mines. The family survived a flood last July.
On a sunny spring Sunday, James Mabry stands in his church at the bottom of the road where he grew up. When his brother became the pastor in 1981, their dad helped build the brick sanctuary with white doors on the front and red stained glass crosses in the windows. The railroad runs next to the church, so close that trains shake the windows when they pass.
Thy good and faithful servant. Thou have been faithful.
On the other side is the left fork of Lick Creek. During a sudden thunderstorm on July 18th last year, that lively creek rose to waist high where the road curves right outside the church. James was there.
I lost my vehicle in the flood, right out there on that curve.
His 100-year-old mother, Lily, was in the car with him.
I got the windows down. I couldn't open the door, which I'm glad they didn't open because the water would have rushed in. And I asked Mama, I said, can you crawl out the back, get out the windows? And she come out backwards, head first. So I just got in my arms because she weighed about 70 pounds probably. And I carried her just about 100 yards down that track to the church.
During peak coal production in the 1920s, Daint was a multicultural community boasting Russell County's largest population of several thousand. A few hundred people remain today. Back then, the coal company segregated housing for the coal miners. James is 77 and grew up in Sawmill Hollow, where African-American coal miners were housed.
Until we got 15 or 20, you know, we didn't hardly cross that track.
Between the dozen or so houses along Sawmill Hollow are empty lots where neighbors used to live. James stops at his childhood home. Lily, who is now 101, sits at her kitchen table in the house where she grew up and then raised her seven kids. I ask if she ever saw the water get that high.
Yes.
What are some of the things you remember about flooding?
Just water.
Mama used to be the main ones that cleaned up.
Aid groups helped the Mabrys clean up the mud in the house this time. Lick Creek runs behind their house. James points to an overgrown, muddy bank.
When I was younger, that was our playground. It just washed the bank away.
This tight-knit community and their unique Black history and culture are eroding, too. Amanda Hall, the community builder at the University of Virginia at Wise, helps people respond to increasing flooding through a program called the Resilience Adaptation Feasibility Tool, or RAFT for short.
We hold a series of community conversations. What ideas do you have for solutions?
The RAFT team started with Daint's neighbors in Dickinson County, which also has a history of flash flooding and coal mining. There, the town of Haysai has been hammered with floods in recent years, with a particularly bad one in February last year.
Our communities here rally together, but it's still exhausting for folks to constantly be starting over.
The program is federally funded and free for participating local governments. Hall and her team help residents consider their potential responses to flood risks. Then the community votes on their priorities. One of Dickinson County's priorities is studying how to expand a community kitchen. Hall knows that each Appalachian community should decide what they want to do about increasing floods.
It's very easy for someone looking at flood maps to say, this is where it floods, but it's a very different narrative when you're talking to someone who's lived in a floodplain for five generations.
As James walks along Lick Creek next to his church, he points out where the bank is falling into the creek, just feet from the church's foundation.
The next flood just gonna keep on washing away more and more dirt.
James thinks a flood wall could protect the church, which is now the only Black church in town. That Sunday morning, the small congregation of First Mount Calvary Baptist Church prays together. There are no easy answers for flood-prone places, but this community's love for their neighbors will be essential to weathering the coming storms. In Daint, I'm Katie Beck.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Tuesday.